Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Imagine your body has a hidden population of cells that become permanently obsolete, sort of stop doing their job, but they just refuse to die or leave.
Yeah, and they're not just taking up space either. They're actively, well, poisoning their neighbors.
It really does sound like a kind of biological zombie apocalypse, but happening right inside us. At the cellular level.
That's a good way to put it. We're talking about cellular senescence, or SNCs for short. Basically, a cell enters this state where it just stops dividing permanently, yeah. Irreversible growth arrest.
Usually because of damage, right?
Yeah.
Like a safety mechanism.
Exactly. It's actually a critical defense against cancer, stopping damaged cells from multiplying. That's the upside.
Or there's always a but, isn't there? What's the downside here?
The downside is, as we get older, these senescent cells, these SNCs, they start to build up, they accumulate, and they don't just sit there quietly. They secrete all sorts of pro-inflammatory stuff, creating this chronic low-grade inflammation throughout the body. Scientists even call it inflammaging.
Inflammaging, okay, I see. And this kind of cellular chaos, is that linked to diseases?
It's deeply linked. It's considered a key driver, maybe even the common denominator, in a lot of major age-related illnesses. Things like Alzheimer's, pulmonary fibrosis, even just the everyday wear and tear of osteoarthritis.
Wow. So if we could just find these zombie cells.
Precisely. If we could map exactly where these rare toxic cells are hiding in our complex tissues, it would be huge. It could unlock massive potential for developing senolytics.
Senolytics, those are the drugs designed to clear out these specific cells.
That's the idea. Okay. But actually spotting them accurately, especially with our high-resolution tools like single-cell RNA sequencing, crRNA-seq, or spatial transcriptomics, well, it's been almost impossible.
Why? What makes them so hard to pin down?
The existing methods are just too crude, really. They fail to capture the complexity, the nuances of what makes a cell truly senescent in vivo, you know, in living tissue.
Okay, so that's our mission for this deep dive, then.
Yep.
We're going to dig into how one team tackled this massive identification challenge using deep learning.
Yep, with a new framework they call DeepiSense.
And the promise here is that this could finally make finding and classifying these zombie cells routine, unlocking just vast amounts of data we couldn't properly interpret before.
It's really exciting stuff. And today we should definitely celebrate the fantastic work of the research team at Duke University and their collaborators who developed this.
Absolutely.
This important paper, it's titled Article Title by Authors, and it was published on publication date in Journal Issue.
Great. Okay, let's unpack that identification problem a bit more. We know senescence means the cell stops dividing permanently.
Yeah.
But the real trouble is this cocktail of inflammatory stuff they secrete, messing up the neighborhood, the microenvironment. So why has it been so incredibly hard to just, you know, tag them reliably using our best genomic tools?
Well, as I hinted, the methods we've typically relied on, they just have some fundamental weaknesses, especially when you're looking at single cells. Researchers have kind of fallen into three main traps, you could say.
Okay. Trap number one. Let's start simple. What about just looking for one or two specific genes known to be involved in senescence?
That's the first approach, yeah. Using single gene markers like CDKN1A, which you might know as P21, or CDKN2A, P16.
Right, those are pretty classic markers.
They are, but they turn out to be highly unreliable in scRNA-seq data. The issue is the data itself is very sparse, very noisy. You get these things called dropout events.
Dropout, meaning the gene is actually active in the cell, but the sequencing just misses it. It drops out of the data.
Exactly. The detection fails. So if you're banking everything on seeing that one marker gene and it happens to drop out in a particular senescent cell, boom, you misclassify it as normal.
Ah, okay. That introduces a ton of noise, I imagine.
A huge amount, yeah. Makes the results very unreliable.
Okay, so relying on just one data point is risky. Makes sense. So the logical next step would be use a whole list of genes, right?
Yeah.
And sort of average out the signal.
That takes us to the second trap, gene set scoring methods, things like SSGSEA or AUCell. These use lists, sometimes dozens of senescence-associated genes.
That sounds better. More robust.
You'd think so. But the problem is how they use the list. They basically treat every gene on the list equally. They just add up the scores, like ticking boxes on a simple checklist.
Okay. And why is that a problem?
Because senescence isn't simple addition. It's a really complex nonlinear process. Some genes actively induce senescence. Others might inhibit aspects of it. Their relationships are combinatorial. They interact in complex ways.
Not just additive.
Not just additive at all. And these simple scoring methods, they completely miss that crucial, complex interplay between the genes. They flatten it all out.
Right. Okay, so single markers are noisy. Simple scoring misses the complexity. But surely people tried more sophisticated machine learning before this new paper. I think I remember hearing about a method called SenseD.
Yes, that's the third big hurdle. Supervised machine learning approaches, like SenseD.
Why wasn't that the silver bullet then? Machine learning is usually pretty good at finding complex patterns.
It can be, but the keyword is supervised. Supervised learning needs ground truth data to learn from, right? Examples where you definitively know this cell is senescent and this one is not.
Okay.
And where did most of that training data come from models like SenseD? It came overwhelmingly from in vitro studies.
Cells grown in a lab dish.
Exactly. Clean, controlled, simple environments. You train a model only on cells behaving in a petri dish.
And then you expect it to work in the messy, complex reality of a living organism.
Precisely. The molecular signature the model learns in vitro often just doesn't translate well to the in vivo environment, like inside a diseased lung or an aging brain. It's just too different.
It's like training a race car driver only on a perfect simulator and then being surprised when they struggle on a real track with potholes and, I don't know, other cars.
That's a perfect analogy. The in vitro training creates a bias, and the model fails when it encounters the real world complexity it wasn't trained for.
Okay, that sets up the problem beautifully. So the team at Duke realized that before they could even think about building a better model, they had to fix the very foundation, the list of genes people were using to define senescence in the first place.
That was absolutely critical. Their first step was to look at the existing published lists of senescence genes, or SNGs. They surveyed 9 of them, and what they found was, well, chaos.
Chaos. How so?
They measured the agreement between these lists using something called the Jaccard Index. It's a measure of overlap.
Okay, and what did they find?
For almost every single pair of lists they compared, the Jaccard index was below 0.2.
Whoa. Okay, let's clarify that. A Jaccard index of 1 means the lists are identical, right? Perfect agreement.
Correct.
So if it's below 0.2, what does that actually mean in terms of scientific consensus?
It means there was incredibly low consensus, less than 20% overlap between most lists. It was kind of shocking, actually.
So everyone basically had their own slightly different idea of what a senescent cell's gene signature looked like.
Pretty much. And get this. Out of nearly 3,000 different genes that were flagged as senescence-related, across all those lists combined, a massive 69.2%, almost 70%, were only mentioned in one single list.
Wow. Okay. No wonder it was hard to get consistent results. The starting point was all over the place.
Exactly. You can't build a reliable detector if everyone's using a different blueprint.
So their solution wasn't just to pick one list, but to force a consensus, to find the real core signature.
Precisely. They created what they call coressence.
Coressence. Okay.
It's a highly selective, very robust set of genes. How selective? It contains only 39 genes.
39. Out of nearly 3,000.
Yep. Just 1.3% of the total genes ever mentioned. But these 39 were the ones that showed up consistently. They were reported by at least 5 of the 9 published gene sets they surveyed.
Okay. So they set a high bar for agreement. Find the genes that most researchers agreed were important.
Exactly. Create a universally reliable, high-confidence foundation. Get rid of all the noise and questionable candidates.
But they had to prove that this tiny list of 39 genes was actually better, more meaningful than the huge noisy lists everyone else was using, right? How do they validate coressence?
Validation was absolutely key. They did a few things. First, they showed that these 39 coressence genes as a group showed much stronger differential expression signals when you actually compared known senescent cells to normal cells. The signal was clearer. And maybe more importantly, they looked at large public data sets, like the GTEx project, which has bulk RNA-seq data from many tissues across many ages. They found that the expression of these coressence genes was more reliably associated with the age of the sample donor.
Ah, so it tracked with biological aging, which is what you'd expect for senescence markers.
Exactly. It behaved like a true senescence signature should. So coressence became this bedrock, small but incredibly solid.
Okay, so bedrock established. Coressence.
Yeah.
Now, building on that foundation, they introduced the big innovation, deep spills. This is the unsupervised deep neural network. Tell us about that. How did they design this model to handle all the complexity and noise that tripped up the older methods?
Right. DeepSense uses a type of deep learning architecture called an autoencoder. And autoencoders are inherently quite good at capturing complex, nonlinear patterns in data, much better than those simple linear scoring methods we talked about. But the real cleverness, the innovation, is in how they designed the middle part of the autoencoder, the bottleneck. This is the narrowest part of the network, where the data gets compressed down to its essential features.
Right, the bottleneck forces the model to learn the most important information. How did they customize it for senescence?
They designed it to act like a really sophisticated data sorter. The bottleneck is restricted to have just two neurons, two information channels, and crucially, these two neurons are mathematically forced or constrained to be almost completely uncorrelated with each other.
Two uncorrelated neurons. Why? What does each one do?
One neuron is specifically trained and guided to capture only the information related to that quiescence gene signature, basically, the true senescence signal. It becomes the senescence filter.
Okay, so it isolates the senescence part. What about the other neuron?
The other neuron captures everything else, all the other biological variation, the cell type identity, maybe technical noise, anything that's not related to that core senescence signature.
That is clever. So you're essentially forcing the model to cleanly separate the senescence signal from all the other background stuff.
Exactly. It disentangles the signal from the noise in a very elegant way.
And the output, the final result from DeepSense, is it just the activity level of that senescence filter neuron?
Primarily, yes. The continuous value, the activity level of that specific senescence neuron, that's your final senescence score for the cell. A higher value means more senescent characteristics based on the quiescence signature.
But sometimes researchers need a clear yes-no answer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is this cell senescent or not? Can DeepSense do that too?
It can. That continuous score gives you nuance, but they also included an optional step. It uses a statistical method based on permutations, basically shuffling the data, to figure out a robust threshold.
To turn the continuous score into a reliable binary classification.
Exactly. A statistically sound yes or no call, which is really useful for many downstream analyses or for identifying specific cells to target.
Okay, so they built quiescence, the solid foundation, and DeepSense, the clever model. The crucial next step is testing it. How did DeepSense actually perform against the competition out there in the real world on real data?
They did some pretty rigorous benchmarking, compared it systematically against existing methods across a whole bunch of diverse data sets. And importantly, whenever possible, they used external experimental validation as the gold standard. Things like immunohistochemistry staining for known senescence markers in tissue sections.
Right, comparing it to actual biological ground truth. So what were the results? Let's start with the in vitro tests, the lab dish data, where the previous methods like SenCID were trained.
Okay, so in the in vitro comparisons, DeepSense performed very well, actually slightly better than SenCID, the previous best machine learning method. Both of them achieved really high AOROCs, mostly above 0.9 across different data sets.
Okay, AOROC area under the receiver operating characteristic curve, basically a measure of classification accuracy where one is perfect and AO 0.5 is random guessing. So 0.9 is excellent.
It's fantastic, yeah. On the simulator data, both were great.
But the real test, the moment of truth, was moving to the in vivo data, right? The complex tissues where that in vitro training bias should really show up for SenseID.
Absolutely. And this is where DeepSense truly demonstrated its strength. When they moved into those messy, real-world, in vivo, single-cell datasets, DeepSense maintained a really reliable overall performance. Its average AROC was still strong, around 0.86.
Still very good. And SenseID, the one trained mainly in vitro.
SenseID. Well, it kind of fell apart, just as predicted by the in vitro bias problem. It performed really poorly, actually failing getting AOROCs less than or equal to 0.2 in at least five different cell types they tested.
0.2. That's worse than random guessing.
It's basically catastrophic failure for a classifier. It definitively showed that SenseID's reliance on in vitro training made it brittle, while DeepSense, built on the robust quiescence and its unsupervised approach, was much more reliable in the complex in vivo setting. The DeepSense scores also consistently agreed with experimental findings, like finding higher senescence in fibrotic tissues.
That's a huge validation. And did it work for spatial transcriptomics too? Because knowing where these cells are is often just as important as knowing they exist.
Yes, that was another key finding. DeepSense generalized really well across different spatial platforms, like 10x Visium and Stereoseq.
Can you give an example?
Sure. In one experiment, using injured mouse muscle tissue, DeepSense assigned much higher senescence scores precisely to the spatial spots within the tissue that histology confirmed were part of the injured region and were known to be enriched for senescent cells.
So it spatially pinpointed the damage-induced senescence.
Exactly. And another example, they looked at microglial cells, immune cells in the brain, from patients with severe Alzheimer's disease versus normally aging controls. DeepSense identified significantly higher senescence scores in the microglia from the Alzheimer's brains.
Which fits with the idea that senescence contributes to neurodegenerative diseases.
It does. It shows the potential for using DeepSense to track disease progression based on the accumulation and location of these SNCs.
What about different technologies? Some platforms, like maybe the newer high-plex imaging-based ones like 10x Xenium, they don't measure the whole transcriptome, right? They measure maybe just hundreds of genes. Can DeepSense still work with less data?
That's a really important question for practical application. And yes, they tested this using simulated Xenium data. They found that DeepSense remained effective. It showed that you only needed to add about 10 or so senescence-associated genes from the coarseness list to the standard Xenium panel to achieve strong performance.
That's great. It means the method is robust enough to work even when the input gene list is more constrained, which is crucial for adopting it with these newer spatial technologies.
Absolutely. Makes it very adaptable.
And one last check. Normal aging. When they applied DeepSense to large data sets tracking gene expression across the human lifespan, like the Tabula sapiens atlas, did the scores generally go up with age, as you'd biologically expect?
They did. Very consistently. In over three quarters, 77.61%, to be precise, of all the tissue and cell type combinations they tested in Tabula sapiens, higher DeepSense scores were significantly associated with samples from older individuals.
Okay, so it's not just detecting some random technical signal, it's accurately mapping the known biological phenomenon of age-dependent SNC accumulation.
Correct. It passes that crucial biological reality check.
So let's pull this all together. What's the big picture takeaway here? We have CoreSense, this small, super reliable core gene signature derived from consensus. And we have DeepSense, this powerful but flexible deep learning model built on top of it. What does this mean for researchers?
I think it means we finally have a truly broadly applicable tool. It generalizes across species, across different tissues, different disease states, different sequencing technologies. Because it's built on that fundamental, validated, coarseness signature and uses an unsupervised approach that avoids the in vitro training trap.
And the implications for all the data that's already out there.
That's one of the most exciting parts. Think about the vast amounts of single cell and spatial sequencing data that labs around the world have already generated over the last few years.
Right.
A lot of that data might lack the traditional, difficult experimental validation for senescence, like beta-gal staining. DeepSense essentially unlocks the potential of all that existing data. Researchers can now go back, reanalyze their datasets, and confidently map senescent cells in contexts where they couldn't before.
Discovering patterns of senescence in diseases or conditions that maybe weren't even the original focus of the study.
Exactly. It opens up huge avenues for discovery using data we already have.
And crucially, is it practical? These datasets are massive. Is it computationally feasible to run DeepSense?
Yes, they specifically highlighted its efficiency. It's designed to be scalable and relatively lightweight. They report being able to analyze a dataset of 100,000 cells in about 10 minutes on a pretty standard computer.
Okay, that's definitely practical. It moves senescence identification from being this huge bespoke analysis challenge to potentially just a routine step in the pipeline.
That's the goal, I think, to make it accessible.
Now, no tool is perfect. Are there any immediate limitations researchers should keep in mind, or what are the obvious next steps to make this even better?
Well, one point is that the coarseness gene set, by design, is very general. It finds the consensus signature that works across different tissues and cell types.
Which is its strength for broad applicability.
Right. But it's possible that for studying senescence in one very specific tissue, or even one specific cell type within that tissue, you might be able to achieve slightly higher performance by compiling a more specialized, context-specific list of senescence genes. So future work could focus on developing these tissue-specific signatures, potentially building on the coarseness foundation.
Makes sense. Fine-tuning for specific applications. What about the input data? Right now, it's all based on gene expression, the RNA levels.
Correct. Currently, DeepSense only uses the transcriptome data, but the underlying autoencoder architecture is actually quite flexible and modular.
So you could potentially plug in other types of data.
That's a definite future direction. The methodology seems primed for extension. You could imagine integrating other data modalities, maybe protein abundance data from CISSEC, or chromatin accessibility data from ATAC-seq, or even integrating information from morphological imaging of the cells.
Combining different layers of biological information to get an even more robust and nuanced classification of senescence.
Exactly, making the picture even richer and more accurate.
Okay, so to really boil it down, the central insight here is that DeepSense, powered by the validated consensus-driven coarseness gene signature, leverages unsupervised deep learning to finally give us an accurate and robust way to identify senescent cells, especially in complex in vivo settings. It overcomes those huge limitations of previous methods that just couldn't handle the jump from the lab dish to real tissue.
Yeah, I think that sums it up well. This isn't just, you know, a slightly better calculator. It feels more like providing a reliable, detailed map for a whole field, particularly for developing senolytics. It gives researchers those precise cellular and spatial targets they desperately need to effectively attack age-related diseases at their root.
Which leads us to the final thought. What does this truly revolutionary ability to precisely map these zombie cells and tissues across diseases and aging actually mean for accelerating the development and testing of new therapeutic strategies? How quickly could this change the game for treating age-related conditions? This episode is based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base. Thank you.